Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. What's up, Big Scotty? How you doing? Welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We have a live show for you today. Today is February the 1st, 2018. So we're going to have a live show for you, and looking forward to definitely doing that. Let me just grab something out of chat, put something, Scotty, I'm going to put something in the chat if you could. I wanted to just play that one real quick. If you can, just let me know, Scotty. So, welcome everyone once again, Tando Radio Show. Coming to you live from FEMA Region number 6. I'm your host, Dave from LA. Hopefully, you are all having a great day today, and we are looking forward to today's show. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, area code 704-802-5056. And that will get you into, if you have a comment or a question you would like to express, definitely you could do that there with us. So check that out and participate in that. So, but before we get into today's show, we're going to get into some of the administrative things. Please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network, everyone. Make your financial donations to the network by going to the website of this network, which is blacktalkradionetwork.com, and make sure that you give some of your financial energy in the way of a donation so that this network can continue to be on air. Without your donations, because this is a truly grassroots establishment, it will not be here without your overall support. So please do that. You can also support the network and the programs that are brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network by becoming a member inside a BTR community. BTR community can be found at www.btrcommunity. It's a social media outlet that this network has put together for your overall social media protection and to give you a form in which you can actually use to your benefit. So it's a membership. And for only $24 a year, you could be a member within a BTR community. And from being a member inside a BTR community, you can post stuff about yourself, your business, or another business that you would like to highlight without being as adversely affected as you would be on FedBook, because FedBook actually allows your information to be seen by so many people, employers and everything else, and they are all, those are all disqualifiers. They look at your profile, and that will give them an excuse to further their overall agendas. Also, is being used against you in so many different ways, but is definitely being used against you where it's the worst kind of form of subjugation and enslavement, because you provide all of the content, but you get no benefit from what you are giving, but the overall platform is gaining billions. Billions. So FedBook ain't free, y'all. So I would say come on over to BTR community where you can actually participate and have a strong presence and ensure that this network continues to grow. Okay. Also, if you would like to, let me give you some dates here. We've had to move the RDP summit, the first annual RDP summit. I'm not quite sure if it's going to be annual. It's probably going to be even more than that. But we're moving it because of logistical reasons. We want to give everyone time to be able to get here and everything else, all of the proper promotions, and just had to work with some of the firearm facilities for us to time-wise. It just was better for us to move it out. We're going to move it out to June. It's going to be June the 15th and 16th, which is a Friday and a Saturday here in Dallas. And so it is definitely going to, that's when we're going to have actually in, we'll finish negotiations or further negotiations with the overall firearm facility that we will be having our first RDP summit. And the overall summit is going to be this one, the emphasis of this summit is going to be around firearms training, firearm certification, firearm safety, where we're going to bring you the opportunity to actually be able to have a practical understanding and use of firearms in a safe manner. Well, actually, you will be taught by certified individuals in firearm safety. Also, will be taught how to shoot, and then actually you'll be able to use that at the range. And what we're trying to do is have it all at one facility where we can feed everyone, and that be a part of our whole day. So that is going to be a great, great opportunity. It's good because there's very few people in our community that actually do know how to, in comparison to others, and the necessity of that is really, really important. I don't know. Let me check. I see that there's a caller that's out of 603. 1 second. I'll go to you in 1 second. If you're there, but if you don't have a question or comment, if you would just mute yourself. Is the caller 603? If not, just go ahead and stay there. I'll come to you in 1 second. Okay, so very, very important, the RDP Summit, and going to post it in with you guys and send out the Evite. The overall pricing, I'm not quite sure yet. Let's finish this part, and then I will have that for you. And that is very, very important. Let me get to this open mic caller first. Welcome, caller. Area code 603. Did you have a question or comment that you wanted to make before we get started?
I have a question about slavery.
Oh, okay. Well, ma'am, this is more of a preparedness show, but go ahead with your question.
Oh, that's fine. I can call it at a different time.
Yeah, you know, it's some of the other shows would be better, because what we do here is we're just trying to get our community prepared. And this is, we teach financial literacy and just getting prepared. So that question probably would be for some of the other programs that are here on Black Talk Radio Network.
Okay, I understand. I'll call back at a different time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so next, so that's what we're going to be doing. So looking forward to June the 15th and 16th in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I will give you all the particulars definitely next week to give you enough time to plan and to schedule yourself, and then we're going to bring you more and more information. But that's what the itinerary is going to be. The first day is going to be actual hands-on firearm safety and firearms training, and then actually learning how to shoot. The next day will be preparedness, will be actually creating satellites for you and your family back home where you live. And we will also be looking at some financial things from the cryptocurrency standpoint, to positioning ourselves to seize on the opportunities that will be happening even in the adverse events that are going to be befalling the country, and how you can best take advantage of that. And even if it doesn't happen this year, how you can prepare for that and prepare for putting yourself in a better position. So never scared, always prepared is what we say. So what's up, Brother Braggs? Good to see you. I see my man Roz is there too. Big up to my Brother Braggs and my Brother Roz that are there that I see. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing in June. Hope to see you all there. And I think it's going to be extremely beneficial and just to be able to establish the overall collective prudence for you to better prepare yourself, because it's really going to be necessary. And this show, today's show, is really going to bring some emphasis to that. All right. So with that being said, we have a lot to get into in today's show. So I'm going to hurry up, get into what's in the news. Check, there's a couple of videos I want to play. Let me see before we get into the news. Okay, let me just say this real quick. Let me tell you what my overall thoughts are. We are definitely moving to a destabilized position, and all of the signs are showing that to me. I'm going to play a video from Lying Like a Fox News, and it has something. I want you to pay close attention to this because I want to make a comment to you all on what I really think is happening. So, Scotty, if you would just play that quick clip. And then we'll get back into what's in the news.
We want to tell you about an Amtrak train that was taking GOP members to a retreat in West Virginia in Greenbrier that has been involved in a collision. GOP sources are saying that the train collided with a dump truck, which was on the tracks at the time, and that this accident took place near Charlottesville, Virginia. We are also getting word right now, as we said, it was a special charter taking those members after the State of the Union. They were going to have a retreat to talk about strategy in light of last night and coming into the 2018. More reports that it appears the train collided with a dump truck, which may have been stuck on the tracks at the time. And there may be injuries to the dump truck driver. We're also hearing scanner reports that there is a triage center being set up right near where the accident was. Looking on Twitter, Congressman Don Bacon tweeting minutes ago, "I am on the train, but I'm okay, John."
The Greenbrier is a legendary retreat there in the mountains of West Virginia in White Sulphur Springs. In fact, it is the place where the federal government opted to build a sort of an emergency convening center for the U.S. government back in the Cold War days. There are subterranean chambers there where the houses of Congress have room to be able to meet. This was all done in case of nuclear attack by the then Soviet Union. Those facilities at the Greenbrier still exist. The members of Congress, the Republican members of Congress, chartered this special Amtrak train that was to take them there for several days of meetings. to talk about, especially the sort of potentially rocky landscape for Republicans come November of 2018. President Trump is among those who was supposed to go there and meet them. And now we're getting some of the first pictures via Twitter of what happened when this Amtrak train, specially chartered by members of the Republican caucus of the House and Senate, when that train apparently hit a dump truck near Charlottesville, Virginia.
That's amazing. I didn't know that about Greenbrier. You actually knew that before this happened. Some other tweets that we're seeing, this is from Kansas Republican Congressman Dr. Roger Marshall, saying, "We are on our way to our annual GOP retreat. The train carrying members and spouses hit something. Lena and I are okay. I'm helping those that are injured. I will keep you updated as we know more." So we're seeing some things come out on Twitter right now from those who are involved, and this is one of the first pictures that is coming in. There is actually a train stop at the resort, so this is something that had been in the works for a while, and it's hard to make out that picture. What can you see there,
John? It sure looks like a train car, and if so, it is badly crumbled, and that puts a whole different level of concern about what might have happened to those on board. We are told that there are injuries, but we don't know the extent of the injuries. Our Chad Pergram is joining us now by phone. He covers Congress for us and does an excellent job doing so. Chad, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing that this train accident happened near Crozet, Virginia, which is west of Charlottesville. Again, they took this special train leaving early this morning, bound for the Greenbrier and White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, for the annual retreat. The president was supposed to speak to the Republican members tomorrow, Mike Pence, the vice president, tonight. I am told by senior sources here on Capitol Hill that the locomotive hit what appeared to be a trash truck, and the locomotive has derailed, but no indication that any of the other cars on this train, and we don't know the size of the train that they derailed. I'm told that members were thrown from their seats and hit the deck. We're getting very sketchy, fragmentary information here about injuries. We're told that they don't appear to be major at this point. Keep in mind that a lot of members take their spouses on this trip as well, and so we don't know the extent of injuries there. But this happened near Crozet, Virginia, and again, this is a special train where they packed up buses, took members of Congress, Republicans going to their retreat from the House side of the Capitol over to Union Station, which is just about a quarter mile across Capitol Hill, boarded this train early this morning, bound for the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Chad, do you have any idea how long ago this accident happened?
That's something we're trying to get as well, because you know they left pretty early.
Hey, Scotty, we could stop it here.
An enterprise to get people packed up, and they take the buses over, and then.
Okay, now one of the reasons why I wanted to play that happened yesterday, and I think it's very, very significant, especially for what today's show is. And wanted to play that because things are positioning themselves, and I'm seeing a lot of the signs. Now, this is an annual thing that they supposedly do. And Greenbrier is where they go. And let me tell you the significance of Greenbrier. And the one reporter was talking about it, and the one a female lady reporter said she didn't know about that. It was good to know she didn't know about that. Well, Greenbrier is one of the congressional places that congressional people or even whomever they need deem necessary within the continuity of government can go as a safe haven. My man Scotty. So here's what is significant. They were going to This is supposedly an annual event. Have no qualms in it, but here's what happens. Since it's an annual event, they need not to even mention about it being a part of, which they didn't. They just said that it was a place where congressional members can go during a Cold War to shelter themselves from nuclear attack. Well, Greenbrier is one of the continuity of government facilities. And the reason why that was brought up, because this, in my opinion, is a tell. There, the news has always been newspapers, And news has always been a part of clandestine communications. This is where the word reading between the lines come from. It actually came from the clandestine organizations would send out newspaper, and then they would send out a special ink, and then the people would have to read between the lines with the message that was going to be in the everyday newspaper that everyone had. Well, this was a read between the lines publication, event, as you would have it, in my opinion. And one of the things that I think that you really, really should, we should be paying attention and preparing as much as we possibly can, because the strategy and planning for the 2018, in my opinion, is the overall training to get to Greenbriars to maintain continuity of government, because an event is going to be happening that they will need to be able to do that. And I don't think it was a coincidence at all. It's a part of, and it's very important for those of you that do read between the line, very, very important for that. And my man Scott, they gave plenty of information if they wanted to take them out. Exactly. Very, very, very true, Scotty. And so I totally agree with you on there. And Scotty said they gave plenty of information if they wanted to take them out after the next State of the Union. They tell anyone who has an ear to hear. Yep. They always do this after the State of the Union. Yep. Address. So true. So I wanted to give you that to let you know. I would tell you that this was no coincidence. This was something that you should actually read between the lines on. And the story in between the lines is that continuity of government is going to be invoked. And for you to, for those minions that they have, for them to prepare for that. Now, will they take them to Greenbrier is just one of the places. There are many, many places. Actually, Steve Mnuchin had gave indication about continuity of government when he was on and talked about there's different halls and secret passageways from the Department of Treasury to the White House. And if you really remember that, and I said that then, that he's speaking in code. So don't think that it doesn't happen, because if you were in those positions, you would speak in code. You would have that relationship with those that are with you so that you can maintain the overall power and control that you have. So the coded talk is really, really rampant up, and it's, in my opinion, in a very, very telling way. With everything else that's going on, this is what is most prudent and most likely that we should be preparing for them and know. So just wanted to say that. Hey, I want to really get into today's show because this is really about that. In today's show, I'll do what's in the news later, because today's show, in my opinion, is really, really important, and I want you to get grasp of some things. I want you to think about some things. And this is going to be from a part of the 96-hour margin call, Eclipsed into Darkness. That's today's show. From the 96-hour margin call, Eclipsed into Darkness. What I want to do is I want to, because what happens in the with people that do prepare, I think that they romanticize it entirely way too damn much. And just romanticizing it anyway is a very, very fatal flaw, or it puts us in a bad predicament, because what you prepare for and what we should be preparing for is not glamorous at all. None whatsoever. It's not going to be easy for even those that are prepared, if those that are prepared will be able to make it through it physically. Not to even mention for those that haven't prepared. It's a completely different, circumstances and variables. And those variables are one in which I do not, and I made a decision to be on the side of, because this history has shown, those that aren't prepared, and I'm not talking about history from just the other world wars and things, but just regular history shows us daily when we're not prepared and things happen, it's a oh shoot moment that is very, very unforgiving and uncaring and unempathetic to whatever your circumstances are. So what I wanted to do in today's show is that I actually wanted to, part of it is the eclipse into darkness. When things do go sourly bad, which I think that they will go, we're going to take a look at the war in Bosnia. But I think the dynamics here are far, far greater than anything that was done before. I don't even think that the Roman Empire's collapse is going to compare, be in comparison to what the empire of the corporation of the United States will go through in going into the untied states of America by losing global nuclear war one or tactical global nuclear war one, and then the unwinding and the receivership, meaning the repossession and the default that the everyday people hear from the standard of the corporation of the United States, what they've grown up to know, what that really looks like in those dynamics, I think is going to be far, far greater than some of the other past empires that were around. And we're going to take a look at just look at Bosnia, who is nowhere in comparison to the overall global positioning of the U.S. And I want you to listen and to think about what this gentleman is going to be saying. His language is a little different, but that's okay. We need to really be able to focus in on what's being said and think about what that would mean for you, your family, your community, as this thing continues to move in that direction. I am very, very comfortable in saying that the actual collapse, the physically tangible evidence of the collapse of the empire of the corporation of the United States will be within the next 7 years, 7 to 10 years, and start to unwind in the next 7, 10, 15 years. But the overall apparent to where it's things have totally changed forever, just like there was a major change from 9/10, 9/9 of 2001 to 9/11, 9/12, and 13. But this is going to impact everyone in such a drastic way. And no one will be immune from it that is an American, as they like to say. No one, even if you're abroad or here, you've prepared or you haven't prepared. But I would say the overall, you increase your overall odds of being able to withstand this by some very necessary skills, resources that you should be acquiring right now before it happens. So I'm going to I want to play something for you all. I want you to listen, learn. If you have any questions or comments after it, we'll go over, and then we'll actually take a look at some other things. And I will be traveling as well. So if you call in after we open up the lines, just give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. After we listen to what this gentleman had to go through in Bosnia, quite telling. And I want you to magnify that by multiples of numbers that I can't even tell you, because Bosnia is nowhere near the overall economic geopolitical position or leverage that the U.S. has, and it nowhere near has the overall enemy or the debt that the U.S. has. So it's going to be much, much more than this. So listen up. Here we go. I guess the white noise is bad. Let me see. I didn't know Scotty was still there. I thought he had left. Let me send this to Scotty, and then maybe it will have a better listen for you. Okay. Let me send it to you, Scotty. You got it, Scotty? So, okay, cool. So Scotty, I'll load that up because I guess I wasn't quite sure if you were there, Scotty. So just sent it to you. So as soon as you have it uploaded, just let me know and we'll go to it. Now, there is a little background noise and he has an accent, but...
When will this night arrive?
Oh, well, here we go. Okay,
cool. I woke up and took a deep breath. The bad smell, smoke, waste, and decaying bodies were still there and made me instantly throw up. My stomach didn't feel better or worse than yesterday. The last time I had something to eat must have been 3 days ago when I shared a can of vegetables with my cousin. These are memories from 20 years ago when I was fighting for survival during the Balkan War. I'm Selko, and some might call me a survival expert. I call myself a survivor. Unlike other survival experts who make vague claims of why they call themselves experts, I have survived Balkan War in the 90s, and ever since, I learned more about survival. I fought for my life for a year in a city surrounded by the enemy army and cut off from power, clean water, and supplies, and under constant attack by snipers and artillery. Gangs rule the neighborhood, and we had to fight for survival every day and night. That was 20 years ago when civil war broke out. It lasted for 4 years. I was living in old Yugoslavia. It is in Central Europe, and you can ride a car from Italy or Germany to our area in about 10 hours. It is a beautiful region, and I had a normal life. I was 18 years old, liked movies, and went to the cinema with girls, listened to Metallica, and played a heavy metal band. Normal life back then, just like young people lived in US or rest of Europe. The first time when I heard about war, had some kind of glimpse what it's all about, was when I saw a report on local TV that people were fighting in a town in a neighboring state. It was presented to us by the media that they were fighting to restore peace. The reality was very different. But people felt this was temporary, and nobody would have thought that war could come to us. I remember there was an interview with a group of fighters, or so-called rebels, who fought the official army. About 30 soldiers in front of some tanks and armored vehicles, trying to look like and act like real soldiers. They acted like they had a cause, but looked like a bunch of gang members who just flew to the military barracks and stole all the weapons and equipment. The guy who talked most of the time was wearing a helmet with mark and badge of the official army. But it was crossed out and he painted small skulls on top of them. He had a long beard and two knives on his belt. He looked dirty and mean. Other soldiers kept interrupting him with comments how they liberated the area and freed the people. Most of them looked drunk or high. In one of the next parts of the report, they showed the outskirts of the town with corpses lying on the streets. One of them clearly a postman, still next to his bike, so it was obvious he was shot when he was riding it. One scene showed a guy who was carrying a traffic light. God knows why. There were dead bodies everywhere. The report again switched back to the rebels, and the reporter praised them of making the area safe. I was watching the report together with some family members and friends, and I remember that some of us tried to make jokes how these guys looked, but those were very bad attempts of making jokes. Nobody laughed. One of the older members of my family in front of the TV commented, "Where are the folks that they liberated? There is no single soul alive except them. That was something new to us." Those were the first real pictures of the war that got burned in my memories. We had no idea we would live through a situation like this and worse so soon after that. I remember feeling a bit scared, but also excited seeing all the weapons and tanks. It was in the same country, but still over hundreds of kilometers away. But who would kill a postman to restore peace? That made no sense. That night I went to bed and had a lot of questions on my mind. The people who killed and got killed were people who spoke the same language, had the same culture, but it felt like it was unreal, like something that happens on a different planet. In the coming days, there was less about fighting on TV, but people started to talk about the war. Some people went there to help relatives. Others went there even to fight. A lot of different stories were circulating, but all had one thing in common: chaos. The stories we started to hear were of course different to the official stories. There was a guy who was a local salesman at our market. He used to grow vegetables and sell them on the market. An average guy, nobody special. I knew him because we played snooker at the same local bar. I heard from some guys that he went to war, and I did not see him at the snooker place for some time. Then one evening, when I entered the bar, I saw five or six guys standing around one man, and the man yelled, "Okay, another round of beer for everyone." I approached the group and saw the salesman in the middle of those guys, showing them something. He was more or less drunk. I got a beer and joined the group. He was showing us his pistol. It was Browning, with some signs on it that looked like it was from military unit or something. He bragged what kind of good gun it was. This went on for some time before someone asked him how it was in the area where they're fighting. He answered that it is easy to kill, just pull the trigger. To prove his point, he reached in his pocket and showed us a bunch of golden rings in different sizes. The evening went on with him telling us about war, how a guy next to him got shot by a sniper and wouldn't stop screaming until he bled out. Slowly, things became more real for the 18-year-old I was back then. But could you imagine today how your neighborhood would look when the system breaks down? People you see at a local supermarket turning into animals, fighting for survival. No more law and order, and some people just living out their power fantasies of raping and murdering. I could not imagine this back then. A few weeks after that, I was at a barbecue at my friend's weekend house. We were drinking and playing guitars when we heard distant sounds like thunder. But they were too frequent and sounded different. We realized that there were explosions, mortars and tanks firing. Something was obviously wrong. We turned on the radio and heard that military barracks about 25 to 30 kilometers from us had been attacked, and that some barracks were on fire. People got killed and wounded. Of course, we also heard the same news update on the radio that there would be peace again, and some agreement would be worked out, and we had nothing to worry about. It was the media playing their games with us. There were some helicopters flying over our heads in the direction of the distant explosions. The barbecue was over. We poured water on the fire, and I remember a friend asking the college exams would be postponed because of this. Another answer is that this would not matter now, and that he all could get killed. He didn't talk too much while driving back home. At that point, I should have gone home, convinced my family to leave with me and never turn back. But I did not. A few days later, I saw the first shells destroying the city. I was at home and heard the explosions. My cousins and I went to the balcony to look at the apartment building near me that was under attack. It was destroyed floor by floor. Bricks, rubble, and parts of furniture were flying out of it after each shell hit. We looked at it and were sort of mesmerized. What was happening to the people inside? Later, the building started to burn and the shelling stopped. Silence and the smell of burning. A smell that will get mixed with the stench of decaying bodies, human waste, and other bad smells in the coming months. At that point, my family had made the decision to stay. Some others had left, but most people in the neighborhood stayed because we were promised that all this was just temporary and under control. Once armed gangs have access to military weapons, you should never expect anything to be under control. A week after seeing the first shelling of the city, I witnessed the three people crossing the street get hit by one of the shells and blown into pieces. At that point, it was too late to leave. Everyone looted whatever they could from the small market in the neighborhood.
Hey, Scotty, you there real quick?
And I was there too.
Hold on one second, Scotty.
Sorry. So, you know what? Because the audio and this with his accent and with that, let me put this other one, Scotty, in. Send this one to you. This one doesn't have the music, and because you really need to hear what he's saying, and really can't be heard very well, because what he's saying is very, very relevant for us. And I want to make some keen points about this. As soon as Scotty has it, we'll.
The army, and for 1 year. Life in the city turned into total crap. We had no army, no police. We only had armed groups. Those armed protected their homes and families. When it all started, some of us were better prepared. But most of the neighbors' families had enough food only for a few days. Some had pistols. A few had AK-47s or shotguns. After a month or two, gangs started operating, destroying everything. Hospitals, for example, turned into slaughterhouses. There was no more police. About 80% of the hospital staff were gone. I got lucky. My family at the time was fairly large, 15 people in a large house. 6 pistols, 3 AK-47s, and we survived. At least most of us. The Americans dropped MRES every 10 days to help blockaded cities. This was never enough. Some very few had gardens. It took 3 months for the first rumors to spread of men dying from hunger and cold. We removed all the doors, the window frames from abandoned houses, ripped up the floors and burnt the furniture for heat. Many died from diseases, especially from the water. 2 from my own family had died because of this. We drank mostly rainwater, ate pigeons and even rats. Money soon became worthless. We returned to an exchange. For a tin can of Spam you could have a woman. It is hard to speak of it, but it is true. Most of the women who sold themselves were desperate mothers. Arms, ammunition, candles, lighters, antibiotics, gasoline, batteries, and food. We fought for these things like animals. In these situations, it all changes. Men become monsters. It was disgusting. Strength was in numbers. A man living alone getting killed and robbed would be just a matter of time, even if he was armed. Today, me and my family are well prepared. I am well armed. I have experience. It does not matter what will happen. An earthquake, a war, a tsunami, aliens, terrorists, economic collapse, or an uprising. The important part is that something will happen. Here's my experience. You can't make it on your own. Don't stay apart from your family. Prepare together. Choose reliable friends. How to move safely in a city. The city was divided into communities along streets. Our street, consisting 15 to 20 homes, had patrols of 5 armed men every week to watch for gangs and for our enemies. All the exchanges occurred in the street. About 5 kilometers away was an entire street for trading, all well organized. But going there was too dangerous because of the snipers. You could also get robbed by bandits. I only went there twice. When I needed something really rare, mainly antibiotics. Nobody used automobiles in the city. The streets were blocked by wreckage and by abandoned cars. Gasoline was very expensive. If one needed to go somewhere, that was done at night. Never travel alone or in groups that were too big, always 2 to 3 men. All armed, travel swift, in the shadows, cross streets through ruins, not along open streets. There were many gangs, 10 to 15 men strong, some as large as 50 men. But there were also many normal men, like you and me, fathers and grandfathers, who killed and robbed. There were no good and bad men. Most were in the middle and ready for the worst. What about wood? Your home city is surrounded by woods. Why did you burn doors and furniture? There were not that many woods around the city. It was very beautiful. Restaurants, cinemas, schools, even an airport. Every tree in the city and in the city park was cut down for fuel in the first 2 months. Without electricity for cooking and heat, we burned anything that burned. Furniture, doors, flooring that would burn swiftly. We had no suburbs or suburban farms. The enemy was in the suburbs. We were surrounded. Even in the city, you never knew who was the enemy at any given point. What knowledge was useful to you in that period? To imagine the situation a bit better, you should know it was practically a return to the Stone Age. For example, I had a container of cooking gas, but I did not use it for heat. That would be too expensive. I attached a nozzle to it I made myself and used to fill lighters. Lighters were precious. If a man brought an empty lighter, I would fill it, and he would give me a tin of food or a candle. I was a paramedic. In these conditions, my knowledge was my wealth. Be curious and skilled. In these conditions, the ability to fix things is more valuable than gold. Items and supplies will inevitably run out, but your skills will keep you fed. I wish to say this: learn to fix things, shoes or people. My neighbor, for example, knew how to make kerosene for lamps. He never went hungry. If you had 3 months to prepare now, what would you do? 3 months. Run away from the country. Today, I know everything can collapse really fast. I have a stockpile of food, hygiene items, batteries enough to last me for 6 months. I live in a very secure flat and own a home with a shelter in a village 5 kilometers away. Another 6 months supply there, too. That's a small village. Most people there are well prepared. The war had taught them. I have 4 weapons and 2,000 rounds for each. I have a garden and have learned gardening. Also, I have a good instinct. You know, when everyone around you keeps telling you it'll all be fine, but I know it will all collapse. I have strength to do what I need to protect my family. because when it all collapses, you must be ready to do bad things to keep your children alive and protect your family. Surviving on your own is practically impossible. That's what I think. Even you're armed and ready. If you're alone, you'll die. I have seen that happen many times. Families and groups, well prepared, with skills and knowledge in various fields, that's much better. What should you stockpile? That depends. If you plan to live by theft, all you need is weapons and ammo. Lots of ammo. If not, more food, hygiene items, batteries, accumulators, little trading items, knives, lighters, flints, soap. Also, alcohol of a type that keeps well. The cheapest whiskey is a good trading item. Many people died from insufficient hygiene. You'll need simple items in great amounts. For example, garbage bags. Lots of them. And toilet papers. Non-reusable dishes and cups, you'll need lots of them. I know that because we didn't have any at all. As for me, a supply of hygiene items is perhaps more important than food. You can shoot a pigeon. You can find a plant to eat. You can't find or shoot any disinfectant. Disinfectant, detergents, bleach, soap, gloves, masks. First aid skills, washing wounds and burns. Perhaps you will find a doctor and will not be able to pay him. Learn to use antibiotics. It's good to have a stockpile of them. You should choose the simplest weapons. I carry a Glock .45. I like it, but it's a rare gun here. So I have two TT pistols, too. Everyone has them and ammo is common. I don't like Kalashnikovs, but again, same story. Everyone has them. So do I. You must own small, unnoticeable items. For example, a generator is good, but 1,000 bit lighters are better. A generator will attract attention if there's any trouble, but 1,000 lighters are compact, cheap, and can always be traded. We usually collected rainwater into four large barrels and then boiled it. There was a small river, but the water in it became very dirty very fast. It's also important to have containers for water barrels and buckets. Were gold and silver useful? Yes. I personally traded all the gold coins in the house for ammunition. Sometimes, we got our hands on money, dollars and Deutschmarks. We bought some things for them, but this was rare and prices were astronomical. For example, a can of beans cost 30 to 40. The local money quickly became worthless. Everything we needed we traded for through barter. Was salt expensive? Yes, but coffee and cigarettes were even more expensive. I had lots of alcohol and traded it without problems. Alcohol consumption grew over 10 times as compared to peacetime. Perhaps today, it's more useful to keep a stock of cigarettes, lighters and batteries. They take up less space. At this time, I was not a survivalist. We had no time to prepare several days before the shit hit the fan. The politicians kept repeating over the TV that everything was going according to plan. There's no reason to be concerned. When the sky fell on our heads, we took what we could. Was it difficult to purchase firearms? What did you trade for arms and ammunition? After the war, we had guns in every house. The police confiscated lots of guns at the beginning of the war. But most of them we hid. Now I have one legal gun that I have a license for. Under the law, that's called a temporary collection. If there is unrest, the government will seize all the registered guns. Never forget that. You know, there are many people who have one legal gun, but also illegal guns if that one gets seized. If you have good trade goods, you might be able to get a gun in a tough situation. But remember, the most difficult time is the first days, and perhaps you won't have enough time to find a weapon to protect your family. To be disarmed in a time of chaos and panic is a bad idea. In my case, there was a man who needed a car battery for his radio. He had shot guns. I traded the accumulator for both of them. Sometimes, I traded ammunition for food, and a few weeks later traded food for ammunition. Never did the trade at home, never in great amounts. Few people knew how much and what I keep at home. The most important thing is to keep as many things as possible in terms of space and money. Eventually, you'll understand what is more valuable. Correction will always value weapons and ammunition the most. Second, maybe gas masks and filters. What about security? Our defenses were very primitive. Again, we weren't ready, and we used what we could. The windows were shattered, and the roofs in a horrible state after the bombings. The windows were blocked, some with sandbags, others with rocks. I blocked the fence gate with wreckage and garbage, and used a ladder to get across the wall. When I came home, I asked someone inside to pass over the ladder. We had a fellow on our street that completely barricaded himself in his house. He broke a hole in the wall, creating a passage for himself into the ruins of the neighbor's house, a sort of secret entrance. Maybe this would seem strange, but the most protected houses were looted and destroyed first. In my area of the city, there were beautiful houses with walls, dogs, alarms, and barred windows. People attacked them first. Some held out, others didn't. It all depended how many hands and guns they had inside. I think defense is very important, but it must be carried out unobtrusively. If you are in a city and SHTF comes, you need a simple, non-flashy place with lots of guns and ammo. How much ammo? As much as possible. Make your house as unattractive as you can. Right now, I own a steel door, but that's just against the first wave of chaos. After that passes, I will leave the city to rejoin a larger group of people, my friends and family. There were some situations during the war. There's no need for details. But we always had superior firepower and a brick wall on our side. We also constantly kept someone watching the streets. Quality organization is paramount in case of gang attacks. Shooting was constantly heard in the city. Our perimeter was defended primitively. All the exits were barricaded and had little firing slits. Inside, we had at least 5 family members ready for battle at any time and 1 man in the street, hidden in a shelter. We stayed home through the day to avoid sniper fire. At first, the weak perish. Then, the rest fight. During the day, the streets were practically empty due to sniper fire. Defenses were oriented toward short-range combat alone. Many died if they went out to gather information, for example. It's important to remember we had no information, no radio, no TV, only rumors and nothing else. There was no organized army. Every man fought. We had no choice. Everybody was armed, ready to defend themselves. You should not wear quality items in the city. Someone will murder you and take them. Don't even carry a pretty long arm, it will attract attention. Let me tell you something, if SHTF starts tomorrow, it'll be humble. It'll look like everyone else. Desperate, fearful. Maybe it'll even shout and cry a little bit. Pretty clothing is excluded altogether. I will not go out in my new tactical outfit to shout I have come. You're doomed, bad guys. No, ill stay aside, well armed, well prepared, waiting and evaluating my possibilities with my best friend or brother. Super defenses, super guns are meaningless. If people think they should steal your things, that you're profitable, they will. It's only a question of time and the amount of guns in hands. How was the situation with toilets? We used shovels and a patch of earth near the house. Does it seem dirty? It was. We washed with rainwater or in the river, but most of the time the latter was too dangerous. We had no toilet paper, and if we had any, I would have traded it away. It was a dirty business. Let me give you a piece of advice. You need guns and ammo first and second, everything else. Literally everything. All depends on the space and money you have. If you forget something, there will always be someone to trade with for it. But if you forget weapons and ammo, there will be no access to trading for you. I don't think big families are extra mods. Big families means both more guns and strength, and from there, everyone prepares on his own. How did people treat the sick and the injured? Most injuries were from gunfire. Without a specialist and without equipment, if an injured man found a doctor somewhere, he had about a 30% chance of survival. It ain't the movie. People died. Many died from infections of superficial wounds. I had antibiotics for 3 to 4 uses for the family, of course. People died foolishly quite often. Simple diarrhea will kill you in a few days without medicine. With limited amounts of water. There were many skin diseases and food poisonings, nothing to it. Many used local plants and pure alcohol, enough for the short term, but useless in the long term. Hygiene is very important, as well as having as much medicine as possible, especially antibiotics.
Like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave, from L.A. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 704. I know the old one. I don't know this one. And I'm sorry about it, but I'm out traveling. If you want to call in, just call in. I would love to hear from you. What we did was just heard from a gentleman that survived the overall Bosnia war that lasted, I believe it lasted about 10 years. And so reason why I wanted to play it, I wasn't playing it to scare anyone at all. I played it for you to start to think about how important it is for you to be prepared, because all of the signs of what's going to be happening here what happened there is going to be similar to what happens here, but the dynamics are much, much different. And the reason why the dynamics are much, much different is because it's two different countries, two different circumstances. You know, some of the things that he talked during the, you know, that he talked about the gun confiscation and all, this is why they're trying to have that now, in my opinion. But here in the States, it would be practically impossible to have any form of forced gun confiscation at all. Reason being, from 2008 to 2012, there was more legal firearms sold here in the United States than all of the militaries of the world combined times four times over. So it's no way in the world to be able to do that. What will happen is that ammunition will be cut off. But so that part, that's not something that I think that we'll be contending with here. But there are greater threats than in Bosnia that they experience that will happen here that's not there. But I hope you paid attention to what was really being said. And some of the things I want to emphasize is that collective prudence is critical. This is why you always hear me talking about collective prudence. And what is the collective prudence that's critical? It's relationships with people that will be prepared and that will prepare with you. That is something that is essential, because in what we're going to be experiencing and how people will go from civilized to feral very quickly, any person that's doing this alone, your overall odds to being able to withstand this is very, very minimal, because you're going to have roving people that will establish a gang affiliation and packs of people going around acquiring assets and acquiring things that they need. If you're a single person, then you probably will want to join in that. But first and foremost, those individuals will probably first take whatever it is that they have that you have, and maybe even your life. This is just a fact of life. It's been happening throughout human history. It is something that you can't ignore. But if you ever, and once the U.S. does get into that predicament, just because you ignored it yesterday does not mean it's going to offer you any form of safe haven in the day that it happens. So getting prepared now while everything is more stable should be the priority. And so some of the things that Selco had talked about that was very, very important. Hygiene is very, very, extremely, immensely important. Every single little cut, every break of your skin has to be taken care of, regardless of its size. It has to be treated, and you have to have the necessary things to treat. One of the things that would have helped the people of Bosnia with water would have been silver, because silver purifies water. You have to have, there's so many reasons why you have to have silver, more than just any form of monetary, but in order to be able to purify water and to eat safely, because that's what silver does. And this is why I really, really push it for you all. But I guess we got a caller in queue. Let me go to that caller. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. Please state your name, because I can't see the board. And what is your question or comment?
Yes, greetings. This is your Trinidadian brethren, Ross. What's up?
my brother. What up, brother?
How
you feeling?
I'm good, man. That clip you played sounded like the real life version of a Tando show. You've been saying this stuff for so long now that I think that because he's speaking from a place of experience, that the listeners can really get an understanding for what they can possibly face when everything hits the fan. I can tell you this: I've been getting contacted by quite a few people that I've connected with on the context of white supremacy, because I started really just banging them in the head about this colloidal silver. And Gus had a situation with a root canal that he was able to successfully heal very rapidly with the silver. A sister called in on his first show back. Greetings to you, Gus. Peace to you too. And thanked me for telling her about it, because she had a problem with her tooth. I think she had a toothache, and she said she was suffering for a few weeks. and she got her hands on some silver, and within a couple of days, done. She wasn't dealing with it no more. On my job, I got people, because I'm surrounded in a close quarter space. I'm the only black male, only black person, me and this other black guy, but he looks like he might be sexually compromised. I don't know, but that some of his mannerisms kind of lend me that perception. So I'll say I could be incorrect about that. But ultimately, in the room that I'm in, it's just me, and I'm surrounded by all these white folks and a couple of Asian females, and they're all catching this flu. It's spreading through the office. My supervisor on my left had it. She was out of work for a few days. My coworker on the right of me had it. He's been out basically this whole week. Another white male also caught it. He was out for a day. This other Asian girl behind me, she was out for 3 days, and she still has a cough. I bought my diffuser in that office. I've been running either citrus or four thieves, and I haven't caught anything. And the other people who are around me in the office really, really implore me to keep running that machine. I said, I'm never going to not run it in here, you know, because I've been able to not get sick. And also, I take silver every day. I think people who are able to make colloidal silver will actually be an extremely important commodity in a situation like that, simply because you'll be able to give people clean water, help them clean their water, help them deal with cuts and illnesses and disease. And it's just, like you said, you can't say it more about how important silver is going to be in your ability to utilize it in those ingenious ways to facilitate health and healing for other people. The other thing, when you talked about the guy in the video talked about people getting robbed, you got to think about that. You can't run outside with your gold chains and all of that stuff. They will clean your clock and grab what's on that body when they're done. Matter of fact, just last week, there was an article that I read from the Trinidad Express, and there was a young it looked like he might have been a Dugler, which is basically a Indo-African Trinidadian. And he was wearing these big gold earrings, and he was shot. They guys robbed him, shot him in broad daylight in front of everybody, and took his earrings off of his dead body. Now, back in the late 90s was when things were getting serious in Trinidad, and the dollar hasn't collapsed yet, and this is already happening in the island. So, you know, Trinidad, the crime rate really started to skyrocket once Trinidad got in contact with American culture, which started in the mid to late 90s. That's when we started to get BET in Trinidad and all that other stuff. So all of the music that was coming out of the United States, they were partaking of, and they would want to act like the bad boy black Americans they saw on their television set. So my mother almost got robbed one carnival because she always wore gold. She had more gold than anybody I'd ever seen in my life. As far as that, and that's just a cultural thing in the Caribbean, any of the islands, but I know in Trinidad it was a big thing. If you had gold, it was some of the highest quality gold you could get your hands on. And she almost got robbed one carnival a number of years ago, so she stopped wearing gold and she started to wear silver, because silver was a thing nobody was touching, but if you had gold, they'd shoot you in the head and take your gold. So then, like a year or two later, they started shooting people in the head for silver too. So when she goes home, she doesn't rock anything. And that's a big thing, the process of remaining anonymous. I would tell people, really get into books like The Art of War, The Book of the Five Rings. There's a book called Mastery by Robert Greene, who also wrote The 48 Laws of Power. You want to, Niccolo Machiavelli, get into those texts, because it'll give you psychological insight to the machinations of man and how to mitigate certain circumstances using the proper mentality when you're dealing with emergencies. I would just say the whole idea of holding on to things that can be useful to other people, cayenne pepper, which can stop bleeding instantly, also is something that can purify a cut. It's also something that can save you in the event of a heart attack. It can reverse a heart attack before the ambulance arrives. Apple cider vinegar, that's something you want to take with cayenne pepper if you're dealing with a situation where you have clogged arteries or have had heart attacks or strokes in the past. There's just so many things that he said, and it's just really important, because we have never been in that kind of a desperate scenario before. At least I know in the islands what it's like, because I spent quite enough time in Trinidad, and You know, I would say the projects here, the wildest, most notorious projects here would be considered Club Med to a poor Trinidadian, or a Brazilian from the favela. So, most people don't have an idea of what it's like to not have running water in the house. I know what that was like, to not have a toilet in the house. We used to have an outhouse in Trinidad before my father built my grandmother a bathroom. So I know what those things are like. And for people who've never experienced that stuff, it is the most mind-altering scenario when things hit the fan. And like Dave said, people go from civilized, quote-unquote, which is really domesticated, to feral. And it's something that can be a shock to the consciousness, a shock to the spirit. And most people won't survive that stuff. They become trapped like deer in headlights. It's like instant PTSD, and they can't function. So the whole idea, right, is to, even like Brother David said, get it heavy into meditation. Learn how to calm yourself. It'll help you when you're walking the streets not to look like what we would call a Vic or a Herb. You know, that was the term we would use for somebody that you could run up on and you know you could rob them. So you have to really learn to calm your emotions. Learn to survey the landscape before you make a decision. Don't just run with the herd. That's something I learned on 9/11. You know, there was a mass stampede out of my building after the buildings had collapsed. And me and about five other people, we waited for everybody to leave the building. And we slowly got out the building, got outside. The streets were empty except for military vehicles and personnel. And, you know, slowly we made our way home. And it was just through thinking and being calm and just thinking logically that I was able to be on the very first train that they allowed to leave Newark Penn Station to take me back home to Central Jersey. And on that train were people who survived the attack. They were dusty. They were trying to clean themselves, wiping their face so they could breathe. And they were calling their relatives, trying to call them to let them know that they were alive and they were safe. So, absolutely. So I'm just saying, just the whole idea, everything that this program has discussed, the concept of meditation and getting to higher states of consciousness. One thing I learned when I went through initiation is mind over body control. Not to think in the sense of eating three square meals a day. There's times when the mind is forced to starve the body. You should practice that. That's something I've learned just going through certain spiritual holidays where we had to fast. And what I started to realize was that my stomach shrank, and I started eating once a day because I had no need to eat more than once a day. If I was hungry, I might have a snack here or there, but as far as a main meal, it was one meal a day, and it's basically remained that way for many years now. So it's something you want to train your body to do. It's something that I learned about just in traditional African life, that that's one of the reasons you don't see many fat, you know, people on the continent who live in traditional areas, unless they have cultures in which, for females in particular, they like bigger women, because it's a thing that lets men know that you are fertile and you're able to support the life of another child. But outside of those cultural incentives, you find that in those areas where they don't have regular access to food all the time, that they learn how to do without for a decent period of time. That is something you can start training yourself to do. So if something hits the fan and you can't get food for 2-3 days, you know how to deal with that and mitigate that in a way that's constructive, so you don't end up in a predicament where you could lose your life. So I just wanted to toss that out there. I think this show is just phenomenal. And thanks again, Dave. I'll mute my line and give someone else a chance to speak.
Well said, Roz, and always, always appreciate your input. And if you're a caller and you would like to get in, I can't see the board, so just say excuse me, and then I will go to you. Is there another caller that's in queue?
Area code 704.
Good evening, Brother Dave. Can I be heard?
Yes. Go ahead, sister. How are you?
Wonderful. Very informative show, as always. Just wanted to highlight a few things.
Yes.
I was without water for about a week when the freeze came through last month, and I purposely did not go to a hotel or panic, because you need to know what to do and how to do it.
Right.
How to flush the toilet, how to still bathe and maintain. So that was a preparation exercise for myself.
Right.
Number two, the colloidal silver is essential. Is essential. I've shared with you numerous of individuals in our community who have benefited from this miracle water, as I call it, healing everything from asthma to equilibrium issues. And what I advise individuals to do, who I provide it to, is a squirt in your mouth a day is essential.
Right.
It's mandatory. The third thing I wanted to point out is microgreens, growing microgreens, which you can do without soil on your countertop.
Yes.
I know it's essential to have a garden, but these microgreens are extraordinary. Very little water is needed, and the nutritional value, the wholesomeness of it is incredible. So great show. Just wanted to point those things out and how imperative it is, especially from a female's perspective, to know how to care and be prepared and to maintain.
Yes.
Thanks.
Always, Yvette. Good to hear from you. Sorry, I missed your call. Give you a call tomorrow. Excuse me. Losing my voice, everyone. And I just want to say, from Sister Yvette to Roz, that's a part of my prepping family right there. They know I can rely on them. They can rely on me. And this is what we really need to establish, because I'm going to tell you, there are many things that you will need, but the most important thing is what you know how to do and how to adapt to the situation and the circumstances that you're in, to be able to always be able to assess, survey, and read the signs, because reading the signs is so important. That will help you to avoid trouble before it makes itself known, or to escape it and covertly, or to cloak yourself from his presence once it comes upon you. Those things are priceless. What you know how to do, and now is the time, while the sun is still shining and the storm has not hit, for us to actually start to facilitate and acquire all of the resources of the tangible items, and the resource of yourself from what you know how to do, and applying it to different circumstances. Because what happens is this, is that you'll develop a confidence in yourself so that nothing scares you. Everything makes you think. And then from thinking, you will be able to solve problems. You'll look at everything as a resource, and you'll be able to actually leverage it for your advantage. So that is absolutely essential. And the
you have another
getting
call
past today. The fear allows you to place your energy into something that will benefit you and your family. I think we got another caller in queue before we go to the commercial break. Caller, what's your name, where you're calling from, and what is your question or comment?
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, what's going on? This is Hassan from Seattle.
My brother Hassan, what's going on, bro?
Oh, nothing much, man. I just chimed in kind of late. I was gonna comment on one thing on the colloidal silver, but then something else you said kind of sparked something else. But I do want to say, as far as that colloidal silver goes, everybody needs to get it. I've had to use it three times. You know, I'm a right now testimony. I just took some 2 days ago because I felt like I was getting sick, and it's gone. That's my third time taking it over the course of this winter, and it knocks it right out immediately, like within a day. So everybody needs to have a lot of that in their stable for when it does go down, and for right now.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say that as a living testimony. Like right now, I just took some 2 days ago. I drank like maybe a third, a fourth of the bottle, I guess, maybe. I don't take little doses. I just drink some because I know I ain't going to drink it again for
right.
At least 10 days.
Right.
Yeah, so anybody that's sleeping on
nobody. Right.
Right. No one is allergic to it at all. No one is allergic to it. You can't be allergic to silver.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I say you got to have. I gave my daughter some last week when she was feeling sick, and she ain't said nothing about it since. So, yeah, that's no joke. I know you can
definitely
make it. I still haven't taken the class yet either, or finished the class yet, so I don't know how to make it, but I know you can.
Well, Hassan, you got to get in the class for you to do that. Yes, you can definitely make it. And so let's connect. I'm going to be doing a class for some of you that missed portions of the class, and also I'm going to be giving another class for those of you that have already taken it. I will let you know because you don't have to pay again. So just as a refresher, because now is the time for that. And we're also going to be doing that at the RDP summit that we're going to have in June 15th and 16th. We're going to focus on shooting and how to actually utilize a weapon safely and properly and effectively. The most important thing, and effectively. So we'll be doing that as well, and we'll be doing the second day will be preparedness. So much that we have and that we need to do, and we need each other, because with each other we'll be able to get through this. And not only that, one of the things that I've noticed in my research of all of the collapses, from all the ones that I've researched, those that were prepared were able to transfer themselves, if they were able to endure and withstand the overall crisis or the collapse. Many of them, there was a higher percentage of those individuals becoming generationally wealthy from what they were able to acquire before the collapse, that made them generationally wealthy because they were in position to seize on all the opportunity. That is also some of the things that we'll be discussing and going over and at the summit. So, Hassan, I didn't mean to take. Was there something else, brother, that you wanted to?
Yeah, just something.
With?
Yeah, something I had touched on, and you also just made me want to say something about it too. What did you say a second ago about when you're calm, you have the confidence, and you know how to deal with something? Because
yes.
Once again, as a living testimony, we're on the public platform. I'll say I allegedly got shot a few months ago, standing next to somebody else who got shot and killed, and just to know that, like you said, and when you have that prepper mind state, man, and you keep your mind in the trenches. In the trenches, when it goes down, if you react a certain way, man, you'll still be standing and able to move on and able to handle even handle the aftermath of it, because the aftermath of it is actually crazier than the actual situation. So, kind of like what Roger was saying, what they did, as far as they got calculatedly and was able to get on that first thing, and that was even crazy. So I'm just saying, I just everything you guys be saying, I'd be like, real life living testimonies of it, like so. Everything you guys are saying.
Wow, bro, I didn't know that. We need to talk.
I've been calling you, man. It's been a whole lot of stuff we went down since we talked, man. Yeah.
You know, text me, Hassan, because my voicemail stays full. Text me, and then it's always a little easier because. I run from spot to spot, but man, I need to connect with you all, and that's why I'm going to be changing some things where it's going to be, especially for what's going on, the seasons. You know how we have the seasons change? You go from summer to winter. Well, the seasons, the striking season, the collapse season is upon us, and I feel the barometric pressure changing. I feel the temperature changing. I see the overall signs that, the living entity as the earth is telling me that these things are happening and all of everything else, and it's coming from the very people that take the orders from the people that give the order, and the people that execute the orders are telling you they're going to be doing this. So it's wise for us
to heed from this good instruction so that we can prepare properly. So,
hey, Dave, before we go to...
It's here.
Before we go...
What's
go
that?
Before we go to the break and let Raj chime back in after the break, the biggest thing I picked up from there is he was talking about big family. And he was talking about more people mean more guns, you know.
Yes.
And again, I recognize that I'm in a situation that a lot of people are not in. I'm in a black community where almost everybody is related, but we're not practicing incest or anything like that. We'll go outside the community to find the right wife or husband. But I'm serious, man. It's that many of us that we do have to check. The elders, we'll ask the elders whenever two young people start dating, if they black around here, oh, we got to check the family tree, make sure, you know, we ain't related. And I'm serious, man. I am not joking. I'm not joking. We got certain people in the family we go to that know all the family tree and how everybody's related. But we had a funeral at the church next door. My best friend from high school, he's a modern-day victim of slavery right now. But his father died, man. I don't know how his father died out there messing around with a goat. Something about the goat, you know, that he had, and that's where they went out there to untangle the goat or something, and then the next day he was found dead. And so I don't have all the details of why didn't nobody notice. Hey, he been out there a long time checking on that goat, and but he's dead. But yesterday, man, our whole, you know, they putting in a new hall at the church next door. And they still had parking, but he had so many people come to his funeral, you know, that we had to allow them. It filled up our whole front yard, filled up our whole backyard, and we on a pretty nice piece of property. And then I'm seeing all the people, you know, that I went to school with and people, you know, that I know their faces but don't know their names. And I'm just like saying, you know, it's just great, man, to be in a community like this and how people,
right.
You know, there's even value in going to church outside of any kind of spiritual thing or because the church is where people come and meet on a weekly basis, sometimes several times a week, and they organize. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying this about all churches and stuff, but because this is a little country town church. Well, again, another church started by family members and whatnot. So, I just feel like people, we need to get out in the community because it is safety in numbers. More people mean more guns, more trigger fingers and whatnot. And I know how it was when I lived in the city. And we had to quit being strangers because you may need your neighbor down a couple of doors down. And you know, just speaking to people when you see them and developing a relationship for those that's out there that's not around family. I just wanted to add that before we go to break.
You know what, Scotty? That's so true. Before we go to break, I just say this. Wherever I go, I try to make a friend because that minimizes another enemy that I may have to face later on. So that's just me. And yeah, having a large family is a resource that needs to really, really be nurtured. And if you don't have it, create it, even if it's not your overall blood family. But, you know, it definitely is going to be something that because you're not going to be able to go through. You're not going to be able to contend with what we're going to be facing here in the States and the dynamics of it. But we're going to touch on that when we come back. How is it going to look here? And what are some of the things that you'll actually face and what will be the legacy that you will lead from that? You're listening to Tando Radio Show brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Black Talk Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And I can't see the board, so just say your name, and I will go to you. So what I want to really talk about in this last 30 minutes of the show.
Dave, you got Ross on the
and
board.
I agree.
You got Ross on the board.
We got Ross back?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's go back to Ross.
Hey, peace, brother Dave. How you doing?
I'm good.
All right. Peace to you, Scotty, too. I didn't get to say greetings to you as well. Peace and love to you and yours as well. Yeah, I thought of a couple of things based on Hassan's conversation. Peace to you, too, Hassan. One thing, I don't know if people will remember. Last year, there was an older black male that was stabbed to death in New York City by a white man wielding a sword.
Yep. Remember that.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, he said there were, because they followed him using street cameras. And they found him following two other black males prior to the one he chose and ended up killing on the street. And they asked him, why didn't you stab the other two black males that you were following? And he said, because they were alert.
They were watching.
They were paying attention. And I've heard that from many criminals, including Jeffrey Dahmer, who said that he knew who he could take home, chop into pieces, and eat. So that whole idea of having your face stuffed in your phone as you're walking down the street and not paying attention, which I deal with every day in New York City, and it's the most agitating thing ever, people bumping into you, just the most idiosyncratic stupidity based on somebody's face flush on the phone rather than paying attention to their surroundings. When everything hits the fan, that phone is going to be the last thing you want to be paying attention to when you leave the confines of your house. You better be alert. You better be looking around periodically, because just the act of being alert can prevent catastrophe. A lot of criminals will think twice or even just say, you know what, it's not worth my time. This person's paying too much attention and they're going to peep me before I can execute my plan. So just that's something I wanted to put out there. And that again ties into not looking. That whole concept of not looking like a victim, it will start with that, and then learning to control your emotions and your temperament so you don't look scared when you walk out of your house. No matter what's happening around you, you better look calm and refined and alert and ready to handle your business if you have to. And that alone can prevent people from running up on you. So I just wanted to say that. The other thing, with silver, my wife and I were talking the other day, and she drinks room temperature water. And in a recent couple of weeks, she said that when she leaves the water out, that it'll start to turn sour. So I said, well, you know, the mouth is the most germ-dense place on the body. And I said, when you drink from the water, if it's not being refrigerated, then the germs in your mouth get into the water and start to fester, and that's when it starts to turn sour. So I told her, I said, if you choose to drink room temperature water, always put a few drops of colloidal silver. That'll stop the germs from festering in the bottle. And it's something you can use if things hit the fan. We might not have a refrigerator, so you can use it for that. You can also use it to extend the life of juice. If you have if your fridge is not working for some reason and you have juice in the fridge, put a few drops of silver in it. It'll extend the life and the freshness of the juice. It does the same thing for fruits and vegetables. If you cut an apple in half, you spray the half you're not eating with silver, wrap it up, put it in the fridge, and it'll be preserved and look just like you just cut it 5 minutes before, and it'll blow your mind. The other thing is the importance of collecting and utilizing copper vessels. Copper vessels are essential because copper kills germs and it prevents the spread of bacteria. Also, it stimulates the brain. It regulates the working of the thyroid gland. It helps enhance your melanin function. It helps with inflamed joints and arthritis. It's part of skin health. It slows down aging. It helps the digestive system perform better. There's so many things, and it can even help aid in weight loss. So there's so many benefits to copper. All you have to do is get a copper vessel. They sell them on Amazon and other places for pretty decent, maybe $15, $20. and you let the water, and if you have water that you think is dirty, that has germs in it, what you want to do is put it in the copper vessel, let it sit in that vessel for a minimum of 24 hours, and it will kill all the germs in that that's sitting in that water and make it potable, drinkable water. So I just wanted to toss that out there because I use a copper vessel every day. So it's something that I think, you know, I don't know how many people have heard about that, but that's something I wanted to toss out there because it's a simple thing you can do that can revolutionize your ability to clean your water and maintain a great quality of life and health. Thank you.
My man. Okay. Man, great comments. Great show. A couple of things before we get out of here. And we're going to probably extend this because it's so much that we need to talk about and strategize. And once again, the RDP Summit will be going over a lot of this and practically applying this to your home. One of the things that's different, the situation, some of the things that's going to be different here in the States is that the States is probably going to have the biggest black market the world has ever known because his whole economy from all of his major distribution centers and all of the routes and people here are used to having everything right away. And there are a lot of things. There's a lot of consumer goods. There's a lot of goods that are out. So one of the things that's going to be very efficient, one of the things that's there's pros and cons to everything. In the country, you don't have to worry about as many people. In the cities, you do. But one of the things about the cities is that wherever you are, you have to maximize the opportunities that's going to be there. With resources, you will be able to control the black market. Very, very, very important. But in controlling the black market, you yourself cannot present yourself as one in which controlling the black market. You have to have alliances. One of the most important things is that you have to have outside ties. And when I say outside ties, those of you that are able to establish outside ties, and we'll be doing that through RDP as well, with outside of the United States, especially with the precious metals, that will bring about your generational wealth because that is going to be a part of the black market that facilitates your overall control of the everyday necessities that still need to move. Okay? So that's a benefit to being in the States when this thing goes awry. And even if it goes awry by war, but the black market in the States is going to pick up immediately. Some other things before we get out of here. The simple things are going to be very, very essential. And what I mean by that is that if you have the means to get with a group and prepare, you don't always have to get the simple things. The most important thing is getting the very essential things that are going to be able to bring you everything else. So you want to have the necessities, but you also want to have a bartering good platform. And a bartering good platform to help you, we have to think long term and big. If you just have enough to get through 3 weeks or even a year worth of, that's not going to really position you well. But what's going to happen is out of necessity, opportunities are going to come up. You need to be able to seize those opportunities because within the first 30 days of when the crap hits the fan here, there's going to be a major die-off in the States. After that major die-off in the States, you have to be able to look at where you are, assess it, and then bring about what you really need to go forward, okay? So constantly evaluating the situations, and I'm rushing because of how much time we have left. Constantly evaluating the situations is critical. And another thing that I want to stress to you all is that I can't emphasize this enough. Being extremely realistic about the conditions are critical so that you don't buy a lot of the consumer glorification of things. Being able to blend in with everyone else will be a cloaking device that will be just as important as you eating because there will be many predators that will be looking for opportunity. I see in the prepping world, there's a, you know, they buy all of these because they look good, the camo bags and all this other stuff, and they have all, and they identify themselves right away. And what people will do is that people, that the wise people will be cloaked in what everything else, what everyone else looks like. If you have food, you don't want to be eating food every day. You want to be just as hungry as everyone else, because hunger has a look. Hunger has a disposition. Hunger has an energy. And people will be able to pick up on that, and that will make you a target. There are so many things that we need to, and we will be going over. But I would definitely emphasize this: never scared, always prepared. If you never started preparing in your life before, you just started today because you thought about it. And now what you're going to do is critical. You can ignore reality, but you can never ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Assess from your own discernment and make the proper adjustments that you will need. And I definitely think that collective prudence, and when I say collective prudence, everyone here that's listening to Tando Radio Show, we should be in Dallas in June so that you can go back and establish satellites, so that we can give you things that will benefit you, so that you can position yourself so that you won't have to suffer the unnecessary conditions that will be thrust upon you. You'll have at least an appropriate response to it, and is not based in emotion. It's thought out. It's calculated. It's always about a strategy. In everything that you will do, the way you walk, the way you talk, and how you respond should have great thought behind it. Because in the States, the bad part about the States is this, is that many people have been preparing. So those that have been preparing, guess what they're going to do? They're going to go straight into predator mode, to where they're going to be targeting people like never before. And the technology that people have in the state is far beyond Bosnia. One of the things that he said at night, they traveled at night. You have to position yourself so that in the first 3 months, you don't have to go anywhere. Here's why. Because in the States, people have NVGs, night vision goggles, especially in the cities. And especially in the rural country and sub-country areas. And that poses a big danger to you as a person. You want the overall die-off period to happen. And once that does, then you want to become more engaging and find out and assess everything. But I definitely want to say that you have to survey and be able to get intelligence on what's going on in your community, because that is going to be critical. If you ever need something, you never let anyone know that you need it. Here's how you acquire what you need. You acquire it as a byproduct of something that you don't. Meaning, let's say you need soap. You go to get soap somewhere and say, well, I don't, in a bartering situation, well, I don't need soap. I need toilet paper, when you really don't need toilet paper. Because then the overall bartering person is going to jack up the overall, what they required for you to give to them for the soap, if they know this, what you need. What you do is you tell them, I need something else, but you don't need this. And then you say, well, what if you throw in this? And it's all the art to it all. And these are the things that we need to be able to have these discussions. And there's a lot of discussions I can't have on the radio. I can't tell you the real. And it's not that I'm telling you because I'm this, you know, survival guru. No, absolutely not. I'm just not afraid of the lights going out. And I'm not afraid of it because I've been preparing for it since the 1977 Lights Out event in New York City. That struck me to where I said, I'll never not be prepared if I possibly can. So, just want to say thank you all for listening to the show. And it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. If you, whoops, one second. And always, before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. Brother Braggs, if you are there, if you could chime us out, we'd greatly appreciate it. Much love, much respect. We'll talk to you soon. We'll have part two of this in a more in-depth way, but we'll have practical application on this in June at the RDP Summit, the first summit. Want to see you there. Want us all to collab there and build and grow and to be able to rely upon each other to where we'll be our first responders. Thank you all. Much love, much respect. Brother Braggs, if you can, chime us out.
Peace, peace.
Peace, peace.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.